Boston fans, this is what you've been waiting for.
Thomas, in the paint, tries to spin it up and down.
It's Celtics coverage on CLNSradio.com.
Into Crowder, takes it.
So what are you waiting for? Dial in right now and share your thoughts toll-free, 347-215-7771.
Put out for you! Marcus Smart at the buzzer!
Tough one out there tonight, Celtics fans. Welcome in to CLNS Radio's post-game coverage of tonight's game between the Celtics and the Oklahoma City Thunder. I guess the Celtics were due for a clunker as they lose in the second night of a back-to-back to maybe future Celtic Kevin Durant and the Oklahoma City Thunder by a score of 130-109. Celtics tried to hang around in this one, but ultimately succumbed to the Thunder. I am your host, Sean Backe. Joining me tonight will be Bobby Manning. Getting cue when we open up the SeatGeek toll-free call lines as well, 347-215-7771. Definitely be breaking this one down for at least the next hour and a half. We will have Jared Weiss calling in from the TD Garden with the grandstand locker room report. But let's get to my co-host this evening, Bobby Manning. Welcome into the show. Your thoughts as this one has just ended at the TD Garden with the Celtics losing 130-109.
Well, it was a tough night from the start. You saw in the opening minutes there just the worst sign imaginable when the Thunder were lining up possession after possession. Went to that matchup. We were all worried about going in. Marcus Smart, about 6'5", going against almost 7-footer. Kevin Durant, the scoring maniac for the Thunder. He lined up time and time again, turned around and just shot right over Smart. You saw Smart doing everything he could to disrupt Durant, but that's a legendary player right there, and he made legendary plays early in that game and kind of took the Celtics' heart out of it very early on.
Early and often from Kevin Durant, got off to a hot start, flying in tandem with him was Russell Westbrook as usual. So these two guys get off to a hot start. There was, a 12-point lead early for the Thunder in this one. The Celtics did make a run early and were hanging around in this one, and it was still a fairly close game even at the half. But in the second half, the Thunder turned it up again, and it was really their bench that that allowed them to pull away. At one point, and I don't know what the final stats look like as far as starters versus the bench, Bobby, but, at one point the Celtics starters were outscoring the OKC starters, but it was the bench of the Thunder that really turned it up in that second half. When you got guys like Enes Kanter just having his way in the paint and Randy Foy hitting outside shots, Randy Foy's been around this league a long time, so a good veteran role player for the Thunder coming off the bench there, and to the tune of 130 points for the Oklahoma City Thunder. The Celtics obviously struggling without Jay Crowder, and they didn't have Jonas Derebko tonight. Kelly Olynyk comes back from the shoulder injury, plays for the first time since early February, and you could certainly see the rust and maybe that shoulder isn't 100%. But Bobby, what did you see out of the Celtics tonight? Obviously second night of the back-to-back. Historically, at least this season, they've played pretty decently on the second night of back-to-backs, but definitely a tough one and a very tough team out of the Western Conference to play after losing to Indiana last night.
Yeah, like you said, early in that game, the Celtics showed some great signs. After Durant kind of beat them up early on, they went on a little run. Isaiah Thomas, I thought, was fantastic again tonight. He was finishing around Serge Ibaka, which is just, I don't think we can really appreciate enough how good of a finisher this guy is. He's going through a huge Oklahoma City front court and just finishing with ease. He's been great in March, but yeah, the biggest surprise tonight I thought was the bench. You had 17 from Kanter, Randy Foyer, who I even forgot was in Oklahoma, poured 13 on the Celtics. And like you said, in that second half, everything really started turning the Thunder's way. I mean, they shot a ridiculous 41% from three, first off, but they really turned the rebound battle around, too, in that second half. They ended up out-rebounding the Celtics by about 11. And, yeah, Enes Kanter, fantastic tonight. It really surprised me that the Celtics didn't turn to Jordan Mickey early in that game with some of the defensive issues they were having, and even as the rebounding advantage started to swing towards the Thunder.
Yeah, that's a great point, Bobby. I mean, obviously Jordan Mickey, you know, he's shown signs that he knows what he's doing down there. He's been a shot blocker. He can be a rebounder, particularly when you have, you know, a big front court like the Oklahoma City Thunder have with guys like Steven Adams and Enes Kanter. You know, having another guy that can bang down there with them and can get rebounds and maybe block some shots when you have penetrators like Russell Westbrook, I would think that that would be an opportunity to give him some more minutes. You know, not go too crazy or anything like that. You know, we're not giving him, you know, 27, 28, 30 minutes, you know, like you're seeing from some of your starters. But, you know, 9 minutes and he had 5 points and two rebounds. So imagine if you extend that out, if you give him 14 or 15 minutes, you know, what he might be able to do out there, particularly with the front court of the Thunder. And, you know, just playing the matchups we talked about on this show, you know, a couple of weeks ago with a front court against a team like Utah, where they have a bigger front court. And Jordan Mickey got some minutes earlier in that game and was actually pretty effective. So I think that's something maybe that Brad Stevens has to look at because, you know, Amir Johnson certainly can't, you know, can't do what Jordan Mickey can do out there with his size. And, you know, even Jared Sullender, undersized, can only do so much as well. So, but you mentioned Isaiah Thomas, Bobby, and I want to jump on that. 29 points from Isaiah Thomas, 11 of 19 shooting, you know, obviously was going to the hoop quite a bit. And you know, at times he just takes over this game for the Celtics and was able to do that amongst the trees that the Thunder have in the paint. You know, with Jay Crowder out, obviously, and having his leadership, you know, still be on the bench, but not out there on the floor. Does Isaiah Thomas really need to take it to an even higher level now for these next couple weeks that we expect Crowder to be out because they have some tough games coming up against Toronto? They've already lost two in a row here to some good teams. Does Isaiah Thomas need to take it up a notch even more than he already has for this team, considering Jay Crowder is going to be out?
Well, the thing about Isaiah Thomas, and I've said this for a little while now, is him and Jay Crowder sort of came to Boston around a similar time, and from the very start, you saw what a great tandem they were, whether it's in the pick-and-roll game, Isaiah getting to the paint and clearing out the perimeter for Jay Crowder. I think when it comes to saying Isaiah has to step it up, I think a performance like tonight is, it's tough to say, but about the best you're going to get out of Thomas for what he can do. I mean, drilled three out of his four shots tonight. He's not the kind of guy who I'd say I'd even want taking a high volume of perimeter shots. I mean, he got to the free throw line at a decent clip. He's poured the points in, 29. And the thing with Isaiah for me right now is that with Marcus Smart at the three, it's just not the same as Isaiah with Jay Crowder at the three. I mean, you see time and time again when Isaiah's getting into the paint and the outside is opening up, Marcus Smart can't hit those shots from the perimeter. I mean, 0 for 4 tonight, another 1 for 10 performance offensively. I got to ask you, do you think they're going to continue to go forward with Smart at the three? Because it's not looking good in the first two nights.
Yeah, I don't know how Brad Stevens can stay with that, with Smart there in the rotation. Smart is a great defender. You know, we've all seen that. He's struggling with his offense right now, and obviously – you know, that may be hitting his confidence a little bit, but to ask him to do what he's done, and this isn't the first time that Brad Stevens has done this to him, put him up against a, you know, a really big three. And tonight, obviously Kevin Durant had his way with Marcus Smart, you know, despite Marcus's best efforts. Durant goes for 28, you know, leads the Thunder in scoring here, 9 of 19 shooting, also had 7 rebounds and 9 assists, but that's a tall order, even for a guy like Marcus Smart, because with the size of Durant, as soon as he gets up in the air to shoot it, you know, Marcus is already at a disadvantage. You know, really hard for him to – go ahead.
And, you know, I'm not even so worried so much about the defensive performance he put on against Durant tonight. I mean, Kevin Durant is a tall order even for Jay Crowder. I mean, we got to be serious here. But offensively, I mean, a lot of people, we're still in the early process, I think, of seeing what position Marcus Smart truly is at the pro level. And I've had people tell me they could see
great
him
point.
Playing on the wing. He, just watching him these two nights, he is not a wing player. I mean, the inconsistent jump shot, we love his size, but he doesn't really have three size. And I don't know, it just hasn't looked like a winning formula putting him there. I'm glad they tried it because he's a guy who can play many positions. He's trying his best, like you said. He's a guy who's going to put in the intense effort. But I don't know, do you go to Evan Turner there? Do you go to even one of the rookies, which I've heard people mention? It's a tough thing. I mean, you got to wonder if Brad Stevens doesn't just completely tear the rotations apart heading into Toronto Friday, because these are desperate times right now when you consider the Celtics' positioning. I mean, they lose the 3 seed tonight with the loss, and tough matchups still coming ahead. They're going to have to make some very tough decisions, I think, when it comes to their rotations.
Yeah, I agree with you, Bobby. You know, obviously, with them kind of sliding down, with Miami playing the way they are and winning in getting ahead of them into that third seed, and Crowder still being out, you know, he seemed optimistic about it. But I think, you know, you want him as close to 100% as possible for the playoffs. So, you know, if it's going to be 2 weeks, if they're estimating that's going to be 2 weeks, I'd like to see it get as close to that as possible and make sure he's fully healed, so it's not an issue the last few games of the season and into the playoffs. You want him to be 100%. Marcus Smart, though, like you said, struggling on offense, 1 of 10 shooting, did have 7 rebounds. So, you know, obviously that's encouraging that, you know, we still giving you some of those intangibles that you like to see from a guy like that, you know, a smaller guy, but bigger guy that uses his body to be able to get rebounds from the guard position. But, you know, I mean, who else do you go with? You know, if it's one of the young guys, can you rely on them? Evan Turner, you know, has stepped up in the past defensively. You know, that may be the way you go with that. You know, slide him into the starting lineup for the next couple of weeks. You know, obviously he's going to be put into some tough matchups, particularly with a team like Toronto. But, you know, he brings more of a veteran presence, and I think that may be the way to go. If you're going to mess with the rotation, that may be your guy. And, you know, and then you can obviously spell him with a guy like Jarebko if he comes back and is healthy. You know, he's a bigger guy, but, you know, he can definitely try and help out a little bit. Obviously, that's not ideal. You know, I wouldn't say Jarebko is an outstanding defender, but you know, the effort is there with him, and, you know, obviously being short a guy like Jay Crowder, you're going to need kind of all hands on deck to be able to help out. So, you know, maybe depending on the matchups. Go ahead.
It's a tough decision, and, you know, like you said, moving Evan Turner to the starting lineup seems like the clear solution, but then you look at the bench without Turner. I mean, you got to rely on another guy to step up for the bench to be as effective
exactly.
as it's been. I mean, Marcus Smart has to take over ball handling responsibilities down there. That's a role he's kind of been underserved in this year. I've written about that over at Celtics blog quite a bit. But, yeah, I mean, you got to either see Marcus Smart step up with that second unit, or even Terry Rozier, who we're starting to see a little bit more of, would have to get a more prominent role. I mean, every move in the rotation is going to have a counter effect somewhere else, which is a tough thing the Celtics have to face right now. But when it comes to filling in that 3 spot right now, there may not be a better answer than Evan Turner. I think I agree with you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously his offense, you know, is there, so you're going to get that from him. You know, he has been inconsistent a little bit, but, you know, he's got that great, you know, that great jumper from 12 to 15 feet. He will go to the hoop. You know, he can't hit a 3 to save his life, but I think if he's doing everything else, you know, that's a good way to go. So CLNS Radio's leading online coverage of the Boston Celtics is now even more comprehensive than ever, from the Boston Celtics post-game show, which you're obviously listening to right now, to the Garden Report, which you'll watch tomorrow morning when it's live, or when it's up on our YouTube channel, rather, and to Celtics Beat. CLNS Radio will now provide basketball fans game day coverage before anyone else. leading up to tip-off. The all-new Boston Celtics pregame show with L.A. Char will be released on CLNS Radio on game day at 4 p.m. Eastern, making it the first pregame show to air anywhere. Go to the CLNS Radio mobile app to download today so you don't miss a show. It's been great. I don't know if you've caught a lot of the pregame shows, Bobby, but obviously LHR does a great job and goes, over the enemy lines, typically with somebody from the opposing team's beat to preview the game. So great stuff from LHR. Definitely download the CLNS Radio mobile app so you can catch that. We are going to be going to the SeatGeek call lines in a little while at 347-215-7771. But I do see here that the third member of our broadcast team tonight, we did go to a three-man booth for the OKC Thunder game. So I'm going to bring him on the air now. His name is Mike the Scotsman Munger. I have not been on the postgame show with him this season, so this is a real treat for me. Scotty, welcome to the postgame show. What's going on, my friend?
What's going on, man? How are you?
I am fantastic. It's good to be on the air with you again. And, of course, we have Bobby Manning from Celtics Blog that is on with us as well. So we have a lot of Celtics knowledge in the studio tonight. I've asked Bobby about the game tonight. I've asked Bobby about the game tonight. He's given us some great insight. But, your perspective on the Celtics' tough loss to the Oklahoma City Thunder tonight.
Oh, man, it's almost like where, the last great Celtics teams we got to watch with Pierce and Ray Allen, Garnett and all those guys, they relished being on national TV. For some reason, this team they're just not up to it right now during the regular season. For whatever reason, I thought that the absence of Crowder was more obvious tonight than ever, just because, with a guy like Kevin Durant, not to say that Jay Crowder's going to shut down Kevin Durant, but he's going to make it a lot harder for him to get into an offensive rhythm than when we have Marcus Smart or Avery Bradley on him. And then two, Jay Crowder's a better offensive player than Marcus Smart is too. And on nights like tonight where Marcus Smart just looks like he just has no idea what he's doing on the offensive end of the floor, I think you switch that with Jay Crowder, and Crowder spaces the floor a lot better. He's a better outside shooter. I just think you have to make Durant work a lot harder on the defensive end of the floor too. So Jay Crowder's absence was huge tonight. Kelly Linick, you could tell he's rusty. Just everything just seemed so off for this game. They weren't in any kind of rhythm. The referees weren't helping him out when the game was still close. You had guys like Westbrook and Deion Waiters just making everything from 25 feet that they normally can't hit on a regular basis. So it's just one of those games where everything that could have gone wrong did for the Celtics tonight. It was unfortunate, but I'm sure that we're going to go through some growing pains right here this next couple weeks without Crowder, but we'll be back. It's not like it's going to have a complete and total devastating effect on this team going into the playoffs. It's just a little bump in the road right now.
Go
ahead, Bobby.
Building upon that Jay Crowder point right there, I mean, Brad Stevens said it best the other day. We're talking about all the ways that Crowder's loss hurts the team. Stevens put it nice and simple. I mean, Crowder gets this team buckets. Points win the game, and Crowder gets this team buckets when it counts. I mean, he came here very raw scorer, and in a matter of a year, he's developed into probably their number two option offensively next to Isaiah Thomas. So, not only in terms of scoring buckets, but I feel like Crowder is such a huge piece to this team mentally. I've even advocated for them naming him their captain. I think that's how big of an emotional effect he has had on this team on the court. I mean, you look at the Golden State game early in the year, you look at the San Antonio game, and now you look at how they played Oklahoma. The missing factor right there is Crowder, and I think just the intensity factor is huge. I mean, to have the guts to go up against one of the best teams in the league and compete head-for-head with them, I think Jay Crowder's confidence, his energy, just the emotion he brings to this team more than anything else is a huge reason why they're able to compete with some of the best teams in the league, and a big reason why they've been one of the best teams in the league themselves. So, like he said, Crowder's loss is just a huge hole that you can't even begin to replace, and it's coming at a tough time for them. We're heading down that final stretch. They lose the 3 seed tonight. You really hate to see the ripple effects that are going to come, but there's going to be some growing pains, like you said, while they try to make do without him.
Well, good to see Crowder on the bench tonight, cheering on his team and kind of coaching from the bench there. But I know he would much rather be out there on the floor than sitting on the bench in a suit wearing a walking boot, when his team's out there struggling. So let's hit the SeatGeek toll-free call lines here. We do have Nick Sesento down in Tampa, who joins us as per usual, and we've made him wait a little bit longer tonight than we normally would, but we'll bring him on the air now. Nick, tough loss for the Celtics tonight. They were due for a clunker, as I said. This was the first time, and I heard Sean Grandy and Cedric Maxwell talking about this when I was on my way home before I got home to watch the majority of the game, but they were talking about how the Celtics hadn't even been down by 20 points in the last 51 or 53 games, I think something like that. That speaks volumes about this team and how they've been playing recently, but they just couldn't get it going against the Thunder tonight.
Well, I mean, one of the first things that you notice is, I mean, the 130 points. What happened to that vaunted Celtics defense that for the first, maybe half of the season, I would say, or if not, two-thirds of the season, was ranked in the top, consistently in the top, five, the top four, the top three. And has now in recent games been giving up big points all over the place. I mean, I know Jay Crowder being out is an issue, but even when Jay Crowder was in, there were several games there when I would sit and watch, and there'd be like an explosion in the third quarter, an explosion at certain points from the other team, and I said, "What the hell happened to our defense?" I mean, we used to just lock it down, and I don't know what happened to that identity because 130 points. I mean, even with Kevin Durant and Westbrook, both of who played, I think, 30 minutes or under, I think Durant played 30 and Westbrook played 20-something. So, I mean, they didn't even play their full breadth of minutes that they would have played, obviously, if it were a competitive game. So, I mean, again, like somebody mentioned Randy Fournier, other players like that that just came in. Like, where is the defense? If you have elite defenders in the backcourt, like Avery Bradley is supposed to be, like Marcus Smart is supposed to be, and I think that's really where Marcus Smart, at this point in his development, we're questioning. I heard you guys questioning that. That's really where he needs to be. Marcus Smart needs to be where Avery Bradley was in 2012, that primarily focused on defense and just let the offense kind of come to him, do the little backdoor cuts, get the little easy shots. Don't try to force these things because the type of game that he had, tonight. 0-for-4 from 3, 1-for-10 from the field. Last night, I think he was 1-for-8 from 3. He's the one guy out there. You can look at some of the other players. Obviously, Kelly Olynyk is rusty. I don't even know why James Young is ever even on the court, ever. But, I mean, Marcus Smart, other than James Young, is the one guy that just looks like he's playing completely outside of himself. He's not playing within himself. He's not doing what he's supposed to do. I think that this change is a disservice to him, but not just a disservice to him, but also a disservice to Evan Turner, who was tonight, I don't know how they've been using Evan Turner the past few games. It seemed like last night they used him off the ball a whole lot. I don't know why, again, James Young. It's a disservice to James Young. James Young, anytime you put him out on the court, dude is just going to embarrass himself. He's just going to show that he's not a contributor. He looks lost on offense. He looks lost on defense. I mean, Deion Waiters didn't have a particularly great night. He only played a few minutes, I think 11 minutes, 18 minutes, something like that. I was just scanning the box score. But that 25-foot jumper, guess who he hit it on? Exactly, he hit it on James Young. So, I mean, at this point, the back end of the rotation has been jumbled up so much that, I mean, you had a particular, I mean, you never get, I mean, not never, but rarely get big scoring from Evan Turner. But Evan Turner has had two lackluster scoring games the past two games where I think that he could have been used in better situations. I think tonight he only had 21 minutes because James Young had 22 minutes. And in 22 minutes he got 0 points, 2 rebounds, and 2 assists. That's horrible when in half that amount of minutes, R.J. Hunter had 3 points, 2 rebounds, and an assist. just makes no sense. I know that you guys probably have other calls and you don't want to sit here and listen to me ramble, but the four fundamental things, not, you know, getting away from the rotation things and all that other stuff and the particular players that I would like to blame, the four fundamentals, and we failed in all four of them, three-pointers, again, we cannot hit, you know what I'm saying, the broadside of a barn from out there from three. At least we didn't shoot whatever it was, 34 of them or what, 32 of them like we did last night. But 5 for 19 is still 26% compared to the 12 for 29 that the Thunder had, which is 41%. We got out-rebounded, 53 to 42. What's the guy's name, the backup center for the Thunder, Cantor? What's his first name?
Cantor,
what's the pronunciation? What's the pronunciation on his first name? Is it Enes?
Enes, I believe.
Enes? I hope it's Enes, because if we just got spanked up by a guy named Enes, then I really just don't know what to say about this team. And then with fast break points, 14 fast break points to 4 for the Celtics. That's our specialty. 64 points in the paint to 62. We got beat in all four of those facets of the game. You don't win any NBA games. I mean, if you happen to win a game where you get outshot from three-point, both in quantity and in percentage, where you get out-rebounded by double digits, where you get outscored in fast-break points by double digits, and also the turnovers. They out-turned over us 11 to 10. And then 64 to 62, you get outscored in the paint, outscored in the arc, outscored everywhere, turned over more, fast-break more. You just don't win when you get beaten in every single facet of the game. It just doesn't happen. And I can keep going if you'd like me to keep going, because I'm pretty angry about this game. I'm just saying.
Nick, you brought up some good points. You hit on Marcus Smart first. I'd like to go back to him. You know, he's a guy I discussed early in the game. Struggled enormously these last two nights. I got to ask you, do you think it has more to do with the way Smart is played or the position the Celtics have put him in? Because I kind of point towards the later one. I do not think he's a wing player. I think he's a poor fit at that three position. And, you know, asking him to guard probably one of, if not the best offensive player in the game, who's about 6 inches taller than him, is a tall task.
Absolutely. I agree 1,000%. I think in spot duty, I think that it makes, you know, in those small rotations that Brad Stevens likes to play with in spot duty, I don't mind seeing Marcus Smart out there, because he can guard certain wing players. There are some 6'7", 6'8" guys that maybe he can stick with, maybe 6'6" guys that are out there on the wing. Not Kevin Durant, not an MVP, not someone that's, you know, pretty much a 7-footer out there playing the three. I mean, 6 foot, what 6'11"? You got to be somewhere close to 7 foot.
He's up at the 7 foot mark.
He's up, and you know, and it wasn't that Marcus Smart was out of position, because he stayed with him. He kept him in front of him. It's just too long. You can't do anything about it. When Kevin Durant doesn't even need to fully elevate to see directly over Marcus Smart's hand, I mean, there's just nothing he can do about it. I didn't understand the rotation when it started tonight, what Brad Stevens was doing. I normally put my faith in Brad Stevens. I've developed a "in Brad we trust" philosophy, sort of like in Bill we trust with the Patriots. We just signed Martellus Bennett, by the way, or traded for Martellus Bennett, but I digress. I kind of trust him, but I think that this little experimentation, not just with putting Marcus Smart in the starting lineup, because that kind of made a little bit of sense in the sense that both he and Jay are kind of like that type of scrappy, rough, you know, thick, you know, strong type of player that can, you know, play that type of role. But when you have a guy that's 7 foot, you got to have someone with some length defending him, and they just didn't have that. I agree. Where was Jordan Mickey? Jordan Mickey, every time he gets out on the floor, he does something. He gets a block every time out. He gets points every time out. He gets rebounds every time out. I think, and to make another comparison to the 2012 team, I think Jordan Mickey could play the role of like the Greg Steensma, who actually was a legitimate role player on that 2012 Eastern Conference Game 7, you know, team that just happened to get cheated out of another finals appearance by the refs against the Heat. That's what Jordan Mickey could be.
That
just running
ref
out there. let him run out there, let him run around, you know, slap a few balls, grab a few rebounds. He's not, you know, completely lost out there like Fab Melo was when we had Fab Melo. He knows what he's doing. He's not going to hurt the team. He just will give him kind of like that boost, maybe 10 minutes a game. You got to get him in there. James Young, no idea what that's all about. Just keep him off. Just keep him off the floor. James Young, cut him, wave him, do something. Trade him for like a second round. If there were a third round, I'd trade him for that and a bag of potato chips that's half empty with mold on it. Get rid of James Young, please. Just stop. Just please. Just stop.
Hey, it's a nice segue
on that
right
note.
There, the rookies. And you know, we saw the rookies for about what was it, 8-9 minutes down the stretch there. And I remember Brad Stevens saying the other day with the rotation kind of shortening up with no Crowder and Olynyk still getting back into the swing of things. It really feels like Stevens for the first time all season is really pressing those four young guys to earn a rotation spot. And you look across the board, it may be their most crowded position, but I keep saying it over and over again. Why not give Jordan Mickey a run through a good portion of the game? I mean, tonight, you just look at him. Like you said, he doesn't look lost. He's setting himself defensively. He's making blocks. He even showed off a little fancy post move today. The sample size of success has been small with Mickey, but it's intriguing enough, and he's playing a position of need on the team even. So it's just confused me all year why Brad hasn't put extended trust in Mickey, especially where he's bringing Amir Johnson in and out. Kelly Olynyk is kind of on the ropes right now, and even Jonas Jerebko out tonight. This looked like a perfect opportunity for Mickey to get his big chance. And I even saw someone on Twitter throw the idea out there of, you know, we're getting Smart a shot at Durant. Why not give Mickey a shot, too? I mean, he's got the size at least, and we've seen him even defend guys in small in spots, but nope. Another game where Mickey doesn't come in until garbage time, and you got to wonder if anyone's going to win that rotation spot. He looks like the best candidate.
Well, I don't want to take up too much more time.
Yeah, go ahead. Finish your point.
No, I just 2 seconds really quick. If you're going to put James Young in the game for 20 minutes, there's no reason not to run Jordan Mickey. Because if the justification is, oh, he's not ready, he just can't go, or whatever it is, the results are clear on the court. You can see every time James Young comes out there, nothing good happens. Every time Jordan Mickey goes out there, something good happens. He doesn't need that many minutes, you know, 10, 12 minutes, you know, in the middle of the game. Let him come out there, run out there, give some, you know, some energy on the defensive end. He seems to be able to score a little bit, get those, you know, trash can points. I don't see why not. It doesn't make sense. And especially like Bobby said, he fills a position of need that nobody else is filling. Amir Johnson, I don't know what's wrong with him. He was great rebounding, but he's not a guy that changes shots, and he doesn't seem to be getting much run. Tyler Zeller is a great scoring tonight, but he's a liability on defense, so bad on defense, can't stop anything. Please give Jordan Mickey a little bit of time. Please.
We're on the Jordan Mickey bandwagon with you, Nick. Thanks for the call, as always.
Thank you.
And we'll talk with you very soon.
Yep. Appreciate it. Have a good one.
All right. Nick Sesento down in Tampa.
Munger,
you know, lot of information there from Nick, but Munger, you know, one of the points that he brought up, which I think is one that we should talk about here, is the defense of the team lately. Obviously, giving up 130 points tonight, and there really hasn't been – you know, in some instances, that lockdown defense that we've seen from this team. Is there anything that we can point to in particular that has caused that in the recent games that we've seen from them? Or, you know, is it just the season getting to them? And, you know, obviously we're getting towards the end of the regular season now, and it's just harder and harder night in and night out to play that defense for 48 minutes, you know, every game. What are you seeing from this team defensively that's, you know, causing these 130-point games that they're giving up?
I mean, I think, you know, it is a long season. And I know everybody says, you know, professional athletes should be conditioned, blah, blah, blah. Listen, I mean, even the best conditioned athletes have an off night. It is possible. You know, where tonight, one of the things that I was trying to make notes of that was bothering me a lot was the offensive rebounds. You know, Enes Kanter had 7 by himself, and there was a lot of times where, you know, just when it looks like the Celtics were trying to make a run and trying to really, you know, put a dent in the Oklahoma City lead, or, you know, trying to, like, start taking the momentum back, you see Kanter get 2 offensive rebounds in the same possession and get a put back. So instead of, you know, two or three on our end, they get, you know, another 2 points on their end, or they get a foul and they build up and get into the penalty early. So I think the rebounding was a big issue tonight for me. You know, again, no Crowder, no Jarebko to bother Kevin Durant. You know, at least make him work a lot harder. You know, I mean, tonight was just, again, it was the worst possible scenario for the Celtics. I mean, you know, I get that we have guys that can play with energy in the defensive end. I'm kind of in agreement with Nick that Marcus Smart isn't a true three. He's more of a, you know, he can play a three in the way that Tony Allen used to play the three for us out of necessity at times. If you want to make it tougher, you know, like a shorter, smaller forward. But a guy like Durant, who's just long, has a high shot, you know, I mean, he's going to score on anybody anyway. And I just don't think that Marcus Smart was the right kind of guy to put on him. And ironically, even though Avery Bradley's a smaller player, he's a lot more athletic than Smart, and it almost looks to me like he's longer and lankier, and he can kind of get up under Kevin Durant a little bit more. He actually looked like he gave Durant more problems than Smart did, where, you know, for some reason, just Durant was able to just do anything at will against Smart. With a few times I saw Avery Bradley guarding Durant, he really couldn't do much. I just think that was something else I looked at. I mean, and again, you know, all due respect to some of the guys they have, they were chucking up some garbage tonight that went in. I mean, you know, if Russell Westbrook's going to hide behind a screen from 25, 26 feet out and just chuck up BS and hope it goes in, I'll take that on any given night because he's not a shooter. You know, he's an athletic scorer. But if Russell Westbrook, you know, if that clown is knocking down three-point shots when he's not a shooter, then, you know, it's just not our night. So, I mean, you know, I think defensively things will get back to what they were. I like the energy I saw from some of the younger guys coming in. I think Rozier looks like he could be a legitimate player. I'm on the Jordan Mickey bandwagon. Yeah, I think that you just play him a little bit here and there. Play him with Amir Johnson if you have to, if you just want to get some rim protection, you know, if you want to have some length out there in the court. You know, play him with Sullinger, so where Sullinger can kind of be the beef, you would allow Jordan Mickey to play off the ball a little bit more, you know, come for the weak side blocks just to be a disruptor. And take the risk, you know. Plus, he's very athletic. You know, get him out there in the open court, see what the kid can do. So, yeah, I'm not overly concerned yet. You know, the needle's kind of tipping and moderately worried. But you know, I think eventually things will round themselves back out into form. And again, in a 7-game playoff series for this team, if you say, listen, we had a bad defensive game, I'm pretty sure Brad Stevens is a good enough coach to make the adjustment, show these guys what they did wrong. They're not going to do this every single night. We're not going to have to go up against an Oklahoma City Thunder-esque kind of offensive team in the Eastern Conference come playoff time. I don't care who we match up against. There's nobody, in my opinion, in the East that's as good as the Thunder is. So I'm not overly concerned right now.
That's a good point right there. I mean, the Thunder and the Celtics, I mean, concern being a Western team, of course. I don't think most of us are expecting the Celtics team to make the playoffs. Maybe some of us with some intense faith. But like you said, I think a big thing that stuck out to me tonight, especially having watched that earlier Thunder in the game, I went back and watched a little tape of that. I think the X factor in winning the game on the road against the Thunder early in the year was indeed Marcus Smart. But Marcus Smart filling a very important role when he filled tonight. I mean, in that game, way back when, I don't even remember what month it was, but it was a big road win for the Celtics. You had Avery Bradley pressing Russell Westbrook on the side, which obviously didn't work as well tonight. You had Jay Crowder shadowing Kevin Durant. So that leaves Marcus Smart kind of in a, you know, free-for-all role where he's able to spend some time on Durant and give him some tough looks and help out on that. See Smart come over to Westbrook at times, and he gave Westbrook a lot of trouble in that first game. All of a sudden, with no Crowder, you don't have the luxury of putting Smart in certain spots for a little time. And I think that Smart's greatest strength right now is giving guys different looks. I mean, we saw against the Knicks early in the season, he gave Porzingis a few tough looks early in that game, and that ended up helping him out win. The extended stay for Smart on Durant tonight played a big role, I thought. As you have one guy on you throughout the game, you're able to get better feel for him, and he got a great feel for Smart tonight. And, you know, kind of try to use James Young in that Marcus Smart third-man role where they had him, Durant, a little bit of the time, and even saw him on Westbrook, and that just did not go well at all. James Young, Marcus Smart, two completely different level defenders, and they weren't able to recreate the success they saw against Oklahoma earlier in the season. But like you said, you're not going to go up against two future Hall of Famers, in my opinion, every night. So it's tough to overreact from the defensive issues the Celtics face tonight, because those aren't the kind of issues you're going to face in any given game.
Well, we will be talking about Kevin Durant a little bit later, I'm sure. Jared Weiss will be calling in from the TD Garden with the Grant Sand Locker Room Report, and certainly have some things about Kevin Durant that we might want to talk about. We're going to head back to the SeatGeek toll-free call lines in a second here. Again, the toll-free number is 347-215-7771. Make sure you press the number 1 to come on the air with the three of us. Again, the CLNS radio call lines are powered by SeatGeek.com. So if you've ever been frustrated trying to buy tickets online, most sites make it very complicated and they try and sneak in huge fees at checkouts. That's why you need to try SeatGeek. They made it easier than ever to buy and sell sports and concert tickets. They pull all the tickets available on other sites into one place, so you save time and never miss a deal. You can even set alerts for upcoming events, and SeatGeek will let you know if ticket prices fall. The Celtics postgame show listeners get a $20 off rebate for their first SeatGeek purchase. To get your $20 rebate on tickets, go ahead and download the free SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab and click add a promo code. Enter the promo code CelticsBeat, that's one word. SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've bought your first ticket. So download the free SeatGeek app today and enter the promo code CelticsBeat. All right, let's head to
Sean.
Yeah, go ahead.
Sean, I want to sneak this in real quick before we go forward and maybe use this as a segue into some more Kevin Durant talk.
Good stuff.
I'm up across the Twitter line, as I am very active on. The word from the Garden is that Isaiah Thomas and his son took a little trip to the Oklahoma City locker room to say goodbye to Kevin Durant. So that's an interesting recruitment move right there, really recruitment move.
Yeah, very interesting. Very interesting. Yeah, we'll have to get into that. But we're gonna go to the call lines right now again. 347-215-7771. We have Sam in San Diego who's been waiting very patiently. Sam, welcome to the CLNS Radio Celtics postgame show tonight. What do you got for us?
Hey guys, definitely disappointing. To me, it was disappointing because I was hoping we'd have a better showing in front of Durant. You know, show him what kind of team we got and how competitive we can be, but. Other than that, you know, I kind of had a question for you. Just watching Smart the last couple of days, you know, obviously he's had a bad couple of games, but just in general, where do you see in the future his offensive game going? Where can he gain an offensive niche? Because it's hard for me to see that. He looks like he has good form in his shot, but they don't come down for him. He doesn't seem to have a great touch around the basket, so I'm just a little concerned about where his game can grow on that side of the ball.
Yeah, it's a great question. Bobby, I don't know if you want to tackle that first, and then Munger, I'll throw it to you for your comments on that.
Well, hitting on Marcus Smart, like you just said, it's a huge concern right now in year two. I mean, he's still young, but I go as far as to say he's regressed as an offensive player this year, certainly from the three-point line, but you look at him on that end of the ball. A big worry of mine right now, and hopefully it's a sign of optimism that he can find his true role as an offensive player, whether that's an on-the-ball facilitator or, as some people think, and I kind of think our disproved tonight, was a wing player. So Marcus Smart's still trying to find his role as an offensive player, which I think makes it tough on him to make consistent plays on that end of the ball, but the three-point shot for him is just broken right now between some of the poor attempts he takes and the fundamentals on it. It has been a disaster watching Smart shoot the three this year, and that's a big reason why I don't think he can play that three going forward is he's a non-threat to shoot from outside. And then you look at him as a ball handler, there's no minutes for him to handle the ball on the team, which is why I advocated last week that the team should let Turner go this offseason to kind of free Smart up as a ball handler, which personally I think is going to be his true future as an offensive player. And it's what we saw him succeed in college. So I think the most important thing for Smart, like you said, you're hoping for him to develop as an offensive player. If that's ever going to happen, I think the team needs to emphasize him as one. He's getting his chances right now, and he's not making the most of them, which is a concern. But like I said, I don't think he's in a position to succeed right now.
Munger, what are your thoughts on Marcus Smart and his offensive progression going forward?
Well, I mean, here's the thing, and it's funny because the one thing that, you know, a lot of us would crucify certain other players for, or for not being in the past, is what we're trying to crucify Marcus Smart for right now, and that's his aggressiveness. Like, you know, the guy has complete confidence in himself and his offensive game, and you love seeing that. You don't like seeing guys come into the NBA acting timid. But with Marcus Smart, I think that he just needs to know when to go from, you know, like 150 miles an hour of confidence kind of down the floor to like 75 sometimes. I think that if he's used in the right role as a 3 and D guy where he's, you know, he can become a better shooter by learning how to become a spot-up shooter as opposed to handling the ball too much and trying to take people off the dribble, I think that would bode well for him moving forward. I think Marcus Smart, if he plays great defense and only takes 5 shots and only, you know, if he hits 2 of them and rebounds the ball a little bit and just makes the energy plays, I think that kind of Marcus Smart is more valuable to this team right now and moving forward than a Marcus Smart that we expect to see 12 to 14 points out of on any given night, just because I just think that we have better offensive options right now. I'd rather see Avery Bradley shooting the ball. I'd rather see, you know, Kelly Olynyk shooting the ball. I'd rather see Jay Crowder shooting the ball. I think Marcus Smart right now, if he's strictly focused on defense, I think that would turn things around for him mentally. Then I think his confidence would come back. I think he'd stop seeing him 4 shots. I just think that that's what he just needs to do right now. And again, all younger players go through bad streaks. I think that his shot looks better than it did last year. It doesn't seem to have quite the little hits that it did last year. I think he's, you know, his form, it looks a lot better. I know it's going to continue to get it better. I mean, let's be honest, the guy that's considered a star that was in this game, Russell Westbrook, he couldn't shoot when he came in the NBA either, and he still can't really shoot. He just, you know, he's just highly athletic. So I think if Marcus Smart can just continue to develop a little bit here and there, focus on his defense, and I think his offense will eventually come after that.
Yeah, I almost compare it to how Avery Bradley was a little bit earlier in his career, where obviously, you know, one of the better perimeter defenders in the league, but really couldn't get a shot right, but certainly worked at it, and he's improved. I mean, I'd like him to be more consistent, obviously, but if Marcus Smart can keep that confidence, obviously with his athleticism and his fearlessness going to the hoop in getting to the line, you know, that could be obviously very very positive for him moving forward, and keep that confidence in him. And, you know, if I agree with you, Munger, if, you know, if he's shooting the ball 5 or 6 times a night, but you know, doing the little things, getting his hands in the passing lane, making steals, diving for balls, you know, taking charges, if he, you know, rounds his game around that way, then you're talking about a Marcus Smart who's going to be valuable to this team. When he goes 1 for 10 shooting, and you know, and those other things aren't there necessarily in a particular game, then you tend to worry about where this team's going. I think Bobby brought up a great point about, you know, Evan Turner. I mean, there's been a lot of talk recently about whether they re-sign Evan Turner. You know, if they let him go in the off season, maybe that does create more of a role for Marcus Smart as the ball handler, as the facilitator, and maybe he could thrive in that role. But that remains to be seen. Obviously, you know, there's still a lot of basketball left to be played this season, and you know, Marcus Smart, I think, will have the off season to continue to work at his game going into his third season and be that much stronger, that much better of a player because of it. Anything else for us, Sam, before we let you go here?
Well, we got a tough game at Toronto on Friday, and we really need to break the streak because the standings are so tight between 3 and 6. You know how hard it is. I'm here in San Diego. I want to get out to Boston for the playoffs, but without them locking home court advantage, it's really hard to make plans. So I'm really hoping they turn this around and get a winning streak going and and lock up that home court because we really need it in that first round. So thanks a lot for taking my call, guys. Go Celtics.
Thanks, Sam. Always appreciate you calling in and the support. Haven't heard from Sam in a while, so great to hear from him. Yeah, and that's a great point that he made, guys. You know, obviously with the sort of the tight squeeze that's going on in the Eastern Conference between 3 and 6, and even some of the teams that are still vying for playoff position, you know, there can be a lot of movement in the next couple of weeks here. So you have some very difficult games where you play Toronto twice. You know, obviously these last two games with Indiana and Oklahoma City that you've lost now, Miami is, you know, ahead of you and has been hot on your trail ever since you moved into the third spot. With Jay Crowder out and with Olynyk still not 100%, we don't know what's going on with Jarebko really. What does this team need to do to be able to overcome, you know, a team like Toronto who's playing very well in general and has played very well against you this season? What do the Celtics need to do? Munger, I'll start with you first, and then Bobby will get your reaction.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. The one reason where, you know, I'm not necessarily worried so much about Toronto, maybe for one game they could get us, but, you know, if we end up facing them in the playoff series, our defensive strengths are good enough to shut down their offensive strengths, where they rely heavily on Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan. You know, we have guys that can shut them down. I mean, again, you know, I hate to keep bringing this up as a crutch, but without Crowder tomorrow night to put on DeRozan, maybe no Jarebko, it is going to be a lot tougher for tomorrow night's game. But, you know, in the big picture, you know, just going off of the onus that we will win our first-round series and end up facing Toronto in the second round, I think that we're a bad matchup for Toronto. I really, truly believe that. Avery Bradley can completely shut down Kyle Lowry. I mean, unless for whatever reason he gets 15 to 16 free throw attempts a game, Kyle Lowry cannot do much against Avery Bradley. You know, I mean, let's be honest. As much as we love Marcus Smart, Avery Bradley's the best defensive player we have on this team. He shuts down everybody that he guards. And I think he would make life absolutely miserable for Lowry. And if you have Crowder on DeRozan, and then you can kind of bring in Marcus Smart as that third defender to throw at him, and then, you know, throw Jarebko out there, you know, mix and match things up, put Turner on him, you can frustrate these guys because I don't think they don't have any true offensive firepower on the block that could do a lot of damage. And then with the way that our bigs play, we have the guys that can shoot the ball. We have a lot of guys that can run the pick and roll very well. We have athletic bigs that can do just enough damage to keep their defense honest. I think that I'm looking forward to playing against Toronto. Now, again, you know, hold off my expectations tomorrow with no Crowder. But, you know, overall, I think that I hope the Celtics get to play Toronto. I hope they get to play them in the playoffs because I think that would bode very well for us. We get to avoid Cleveland at least to the Eastern Conference Finals, and I think it would be a great series for us.
Well, to respond to that, when you look at the Celtics right now, these games just become all the more important. I mean, like you said, they would love to go into that second round against Toronto because that looks like a favorable matchup for them, at least according to you. I kind of go back and forth on that. I doubted Toronto going into this year, but, man, they are proving themselves. They dominate on their home floor. DeMar DeRozan is having a brilliant season. Valanciunas is coming to his own. They have some legitimate ballers up there, and they're deep, just like the Celtics are. So, to say back to that, the Celtics, they fell out of the 3 seed tonight, and that's something we have to consider. If they fall out of that 3 seed, they're going to be playing Cleveland round 2. It matches up as in the winner of the 3 and 6 plays the winner of the 2 and 7, which would be assumably Toronto. But if you fall down to that 4 seed, you're playing Cleveland round 2, even if you take it past that. And I don't think anyone believes in us over Cleveland at this point, at least, unless Cleveland really does turn into a disaster. So what do the Celtics need to do going forward right now? I mean, they can't use this Crowder loss as a crutch, but they have some important games coming up. They need to win these games with or without Crowder, and it's going to be without because high ankle sprains are saying 2 weeks. You never know what you're going to get out of a high ankle sprain. For all we know, he can miss the rest of the regular season. So Brad Stevens, I have a feeling he's going to do this because he's a great coach. We have trust in him, but he needs to be decisive. He needs to make a move and stick with it. Moving Smart to the three frustrated me. It's not a good move long-term, especially for his development, but the Celtics have put their short-term winning ahead of their long-term development this season, which I don't have a problem with, but you need to make decisive moves like that. Tonight, no Crowder. You need someone to defend Durant. You take the risk and go with Smart. It didn't work out. But when you're fighting for such tight positioning in the East right now, you need to make decisive moves like that. I mean, whether you're going to send Isaiah to the bench and empower Turner as a starter, whether you're going to move Turner to the starting lineup with Isaiah and hope that Smart can lead that bench unit, you need to do something decisive and do it now because you're playing Toronto Friday night. You're playing Charlotte next week, who's on the come up against the Celtics, and Miami just keeps winning games. So the Celtics can't let down. They need to make a move and stick with it and hope that it works because right now there's no point. There's no way they can stay with what they're doing and hope to hold on to positioning because we felt good about them as a three seed for so long now that we've forgotten that they could be the sixth seed in a week if they have a bad week. That's how tight the East is. So we'll see what they do for that Friday game, but whatever it is, it's got to be decisive and they got to roll with it. They took the risk with Smart tonight. Like I said, it didn't work out. Now it's on to the next plan, whether that's empowering Mickey, empowering Turner. It needs to be something.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously with, you know, we would have hoped that these couple of games with Toronto coming up would have been them looking to slide into the second spot to overtake Toronto. But like you said, Bobby, the way they've been playing, you know, obviously that's not the case. But, you know, the Celtics need to stop the bleeding here. Two-game losing streak. They don't want it to be a three-game losing streak. You know, then you're talking about falling even further in the standings. So something that that obviously Brad Stevens is going to have to nip in the bud here fairly quickly. Now, I do want to get back to Durant, and we should have Jared Weiss calling in from the TD Garden in a little while here with the Grandstand Locker Room Report. So bringing him on may preempt our discussion here, but we'd also like to involve him in this discussion because of the comments that Kevin Durant was made pregame with some of the questions he was asked by the Boston media. But I would say, you know, at this point last year, the thought of Kevin Durant becoming a Boston Celtic was slim to none. Now, I don't know if we're getting our hopes up or if, you know, there's some legitimacy to any of these rumors that are going around, but there seems to be some steam rising up on this Kevin Durant to the Boston Celtics story. So I'd love to get your feedback on it. I'm going to provide my own as well. But, you know, is there a chance? Are we saying there's a chance? Even if it's one in a million, even if we have to sign Al Horford to do it. Bobby, what are your thoughts on Kevin Durant to Boston?
There's definitely a chance. I'll start with a decisive answer right there. Kevin Durant is in getting deep into his career. Came into the league in 2007, I believe. They went to the finals, but when you think about it, they really haven't even touched a championship yet in Oklahoma City. And I think that is a very underrated disappointment that people are going to look back at and go, wow, how did a team with two of the greatest players of all time not even come close to winning a championship, especially when they had some really good chances to do it? So it's kind of a cop-out answer, but I'll say this. I don't think even Kevin Durant knows what he's going to do this offseason yet.
Mm-hmm.
Because they make a deep run in the playoffs. They fall just short of the finals, even get to the finals. There's no way he's going to leave Oklahoma City, even if he just signs on for a year with an opt-out and heads in the free agency with his buddy Westbrook again next year. That's certainly a possibility. Anything's on the table, but I'll tell you this. Boston has never been a free agent destination, but I also don't think we've ever seen a Celtics team on the rise quite like this team is right now, where they're competing way ahead of their level, where you look at a player like Durant coming into the mix, that would suddenly make them very legitimate contenders. They can pay him the big money. They have the cap space. Of course, anyone can, but you got to hope their big appeals are the coach, the young players, and like you said, with Horford, I think you're going to have to bring another guy in here to make the final sell. Like even Kevin Garnett, everyone forgets he did not want to come to Boston at all. And at the moment, you saw with Durant's comments right today, he was nice about it. He didn't want to cause a stir, but he also didn't say anything that made you believe that he's really going to consider Boston right now as a destination for himself, because I like to be optimistic. I'm an optimistic writer over at Celtics Blog, and even one of our other writers, Kevin O'Connor, sees a chance. At the very moment, there isn't a very solid chance that the Celtics are going to be able to acquire him, seeing how well Oklahoma is playing and seeing what appeals Boston has to offer him.
Munger, return to the Raptors too? Is that what's going to happen in the next couple of years here?
Oh, yeah, I could definitely see that one coming. It'd be the greatest sequel in the history of all sports documentaries. listen, you know, I'm the eternal homer. This is no secret to everybody. But the reasons I'm going to say yes, I'm actually going to use more than just homer logic here. There are a lot of excuses made as to why, for whatever reason, free agents don't come to Boston. Well, Danny Ainge has had a long-term goal in mind. He had a five-year goal to win a championship, and he got it. But then after that, we've never had the cap space to even think about going after a max contract guy or anybody that was really a franchise changer. We just haven't had it since gotten forever. So this is really the first chance that we've had since I can remember watching the Celtics where we've had a chance to not only get one, but two max contract kind of guys in free agency. So I think that myth, you know, can kind of go out the way, you know, the wayside here. I mean, secondly, you hear everybody talking about, oh, it's too cold, people don't want to come to cold cities. But then for some reason, New York and Chicago are always brought up as destinations. Those cities are just as cold as Boston, if not colder at times during the wintertime. You know, the weather, if you really want to break it down, the weather should be a non-factor, because unless you want to spend your winters on the beach, you know, the only two places in the NBA you're going to do that in are, what, Miami and Los Angeles. And neither one of those franchises are in a better, you know, in a better condition right now to contend for the next 5 to 10 years than we are. So that nonsense needs to go out the window. If you win, you're going to get the marketing dollars. You don't have to go to New York or Los Angeles or Chicago to become that transcendent superstar where you're going to get the marketing dollars. If you win, you're going to do it anyway. I mean, let's be real. I don't see a lot of Carmelo Anthony on TV right now, and he's in New York. You know, I mean, he's in the mecca, the media mecca of all media meccas here. I just don't see it. So I think if Durant were to come to Boston and win and put this team back on the map, you know, then he develops the rivalry with LeBron in the Eastern Conference the next couple of years. He has a better supporting cast around him right now. And you know, let me take another shot at, you know, Westbrook again here. You could tell the frustration that Kevin Durant has right now playing with Russell Westbrook. Westbrook just doesn't know his place. All right, there's no secret to anybody that watches Oklahoma City that Kevin Durant is Batman. He is the alpha dog. But Russell Westbrook just doesn't understand it. He doesn't realize that he's Robin. You know, there's nights where he's, you know, not to stay down the cheesy Justice League, you know, quotes here, but there's nights where Westbrook looks like he's barely even the Green Lantern, and he just still doesn't want to give up the ball to Batman. So I think if Durant comes here, he is the unquestioned alpha dog. I don't think Isaiah Thomas has the ego that Westbrook does. So I think he'd gladly slide into that secondary role. We have the perfect complementary pieces around him right now. I just think in the Eastern Conference, it's a much easier path to the finals than it is out West. I mean, look at the teams that are out West. The Spurs aren't going anywhere. You know, they made sure of that with Kawhi Leonard and LaMarcus Aldridge. You know, they have their Duncan Ginobili replacements here. The Warriors aren't going anywhere. You know, Portland's another younger team on the rise. Yeah, there's just so much going on out West, it would make perfect sense for Durant to come to Boston. You know, I mean, and what's the other stuff I heard on the radio today? The whole Boston is a racist city. There's racism everywhere. But last time I checked, the Boston Celtics were, you know, they kind of broke the barriers for racial diversity in the NBA. Weren't they the first one to draft a black player? Weren't we the first ones to hire a black coach? with Bill Russell.
Munga, I'm gonna fire back and kind of play a little devil advocate with you on that, on the whole Boston as a destination thing. I don't think racism is in anyone's mind at all. I don't think people really see Boston as a racist city. They definitely have some racial history, which is legitimate, but that is not the reason Boston isn't a free agent destination. I think when you look at Boston, and there's recent history to play into this notion, I don't think players understand what this city's all about. I don't think they understand what the Celtics experience is all about. I don't think they fully understand what is going on with this team right now. You even saw Russell Westbrook. They asked him, have you kind of paid attention to the rise of Marcus Smart this year? He responds with, nope, we're focused on ourselves. We're not looking at what's going on in Boston. They asked Kevin Durant about Boston. He says it's cold and it's a great family atmosphere, which you listen to that as people who follow the Celtics every day, all three of us, that's just kind of a very simplistic vision of what Boston basketball is all about. So the recent history to play into this notion, I'd say, and I'll make this real quick so we can get back to Sean, is Isaiah Thomas. Danny Ainge had his eyes on Isaiah Thomas out of Sacramento from the very start. He hits free agency. Ainge is trying like crazy to get him, and he didn't even come close. Isaiah goes to Phoenix and accepts a six-man role down there. He has to trade to get Isaiah Thomas here. And look at Isaiah Thomas now, having the time of his life. He's the center of this new Celtics identity. And you ask him now where he would want to play, I don't think there's anywhere better than Boston. You have to get these guys in here. And it's a tough tug and pull to really fully understand what the experience is all about. If they could somehow get Kevin Durant in here via trade, I think you would see Kevin Durant think Boston is the greatest thing in the world. But right now he's in Oklahoma. He's focused on his own situation. And it seems like kind of a lame thing, but I don't think he's thinking in the slightest bit about his future right now. I think they're the 3 seed in the West. He's trying to pursue a championship. And I don't think what playing with the Boston Celtics would be like is even crossing his mind right now. And you saw that with some of his answers with the media today.
Well, let me just throw this back out there, you guys, real quick, and I don't mean to interrupt here or anything. I apologize. But you had mentioned before Oklahoma City, you know, possibly if they don't win the championship, even if they make the conference finals, but it's one of those things where Oklahoma City plays well, but, again, Russell Westbrook shoots them out of games or his, you know, just completely – wild, out-of-control style costs them, you know, key stretches during games where Durant just can't get them back out of it. And the frustration is there where you see them starting the infighting again because, you know, just Westbrook is unable just to understand his role. That frustration right there, we've seen it in the past. You know, we've seen it come to the head a little bit at times where they're yelling at each other on the court. I think that's something that, I don't necessarily know if the national media is going to run with it just because I just don't think that ESPN has the balls to do something like that. But I think that's something that can't be overlooked here just because, you know, Kevin Durant's got to get sick and tired of not getting the ball more than your point guard. If you're the best scorer in the league and you're not shooting, if you're, you know, getting less shots per game than your point guard, who's supposed to be your main facilitator, I think that's a problem. And I think that that's something that would be alleviated if he actually just sat down from a basketball perspective and compared Boston to staying in Oklahoma City. I think if they don't win the championship, that well is run dry. They're not going to get better out in Oklahoma City. I just don't see it. They're not going to add that other piece out there to get them better because it's not going to matter who they bring in. Westbrook's going to screw everything up. Comes to Boston, we get Horford, you know, before or after him or, you know, at the same time, whatever it is we have to do. Then you're looking at a completely different atmosphere out here, and I think that's the right kind of pieces, the right kind of atmosphere, the right kind of mindset to help Kevin Durant achieve his ultimate goal, which is win a championship.
Great stuff, guys. And, you know, I mean, for the last, what, couple of years now, since this whole rebuild began, my whole thing has been, you know, what's Danny's end game? Who's the player that he covets that is going to be, you know, the number one superstar on this team? They haven't had that since, you know, Pierce and Garnett left. You know, although Isaiah Thomas' star is continuing to rise, and he's kind of set himself apart with his play, especially this season. But I still feel like a Kevin Durant to Boston situation is still a little bit of a pipe dream. You know, although it's a great fit, and obviously the salary cap can work because they can offer two max deals, and then they have Amir Johnson's contract, which they could trade and, you know, obviously help their situation out a little bit as well. It's a little bit of a wrinkle in his contract, right, Bobby?
Yeah, they can opt out of the second year, pretty much dump him off the books if they need to.
Yeah,
it was a it was first year guaranteed, second year option on the team, so that was a good, that was a smart move by Ainge.
Yeah, so a kind of a shrewd move by Danny Ainge to have that at his disposal, right when he might need to get two top players in this league. I'm gonna, you know, refrain from getting overly excited about Kevin Durant to Boston. Like you said, Bobby, you know, they're in the midst of a playoff run. They're the three seed in the West. They have a tough road to climb to be able to even get to the Western Conference Finals. Never mind likely going up against Golden State for the Western Conference Finals to go to the NBA Championship. I like the idea of Al Horford being able to bring Kevin Durant here, but I'm going to slow my roll a little bit on this and not get overly excited about it. I think there's too many other factors. If Kevin Durant did sit down and actually look at his options, which he will after the season, you know, we've heard about him wanting to go home and play with the Wizards. We've heard about him going to Golden State. You know, Chicago is likely an option. Obviously, staying in Oklahoma City is probably still the number one option, because they have had some success there. But, I'm not going to get too overly excited about it. That's the thing. I want to. The homer in me wants to be all excited, like when we first started hearing the Kevin Garnett rumors. Munger, you remember this. When we first started hearing the Kevin Garnett rumors, it's like, oh, my God, they're going right to the championship. And then we're hearing from Garnett, nah, he doesn't want to come to Boston. And then all of a sudden, Danny Ainge makes the move for Ray Allen. And the next thing we hear is Kevin Garnett is a Boston Celtic. So if that can happen this summer, I'm all for it. And obviously, I mean, why wouldn't you be all for it? But I'm just going to temper my expectations on that. There's still too many things going on for me to get overly excited about that. This team has been fun to watch. They're actually tied for the fifth spot now. You got teams right below them that are still vying for it. Atlanta must have won tonight, so they're tied. You still have Charlotte and Indiana that are hanging around in that 7 or 8 spot. So they have stuff to concentrate on for this season to try and make a run before they start looking at next season, I think. But, obviously great to think about that there's even a little bit of a chance. I mean, Stephen A. Smith is putting it at a 50-50 chance. I think that might be overextending it a little bit. I don't know about you guys.
It's also Stephen A. Smith, but remember.
Well, today's podcast has been powered by Audible.com. Audible.com is a leading provider of audiobooks with more than 180,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. Audiobooks are great to listen to while driving, running errands, in the gym, or just simply at home relaxing. So for our audience members, Audible is offering a free 30-day trial. Just go to audiblepodcast.com/Celtics, and you can browse over 180,000 audio programs. Download a title free and start listening. It's that easy. One audiobook you should definitely consider, and one that I've already listened to, is frequent CLNS radio guest and sports beat legend Bob Ryan and his book Scribe. You can get a 30-day free trial at audiblepodcast.com/Celtics and download Scribe, narrated by Bob Ryan himself. And again, all you need to do is go to audiblepodcast.com/Celtics and start your free trial today. So, obviously with the, with the Kevin Durant news coming around, you know, they were going to ask the questions. Bobby, you had kind of talked about this a little bit earlier, but Munger, did you hear the pregame comments from Kevin Durant? I mean, obviously he's not going to give too much information, but what were your thoughts on what Durant had to say about the city of Boston before the game tonight?
Well, you know, I mean, I thought it was, again, they were more positive than negative. Yeah, I mean, again, you know, you talked about it being cold, but so were most NBA cities. You know, they really are. You know, outside of the, you know, the Miami and Los Angeles, you know, or some of the deep south cities, you're going to end up with cold no matter where you go. You know, and basketball is a winter sport. You're traveling anyway. You can still go anywhere you want during the summertime. You don't have to stay in the cities that you play in during the summertime. So, again, that's really a non-issue when you really break it down, because they're playing basketball most of the time anyway. So that's just unimportant to me. You know, I like the fact that he was complimentary. You know, a lot of players, I think there's a lot of players out there that just would be kind of indifferent about it. But, you know, he did mention the fans and, you know, how passionate they were and how they loved their sports teams here. And I mean, I think that can't be overlooked either. You know, all athletes talk to each other one way or another. And when word gets out about how much we love our athletes here, you know, no matter what, I think that's a big thing. And again, not to backtrack too much, but when we talked about the racial aspect of it, when it comes to the Boston Celtics, the last white superstar that we had was Kevin McHale. You know, I mean, and that was at the peak end of his career in 1993. Since then, every one of our, like you say, all of our best players, you know, all due respect to the ginger-haired assassin, White Mamba Scalabrine here, all of our best players have been black, you know, black players. Paul Pierce, Antoine Walker, Kevin Garnett, Ray Allen, Rajon Rondo, Isaiah Thomas, Avery Bradley. All of our top dogs have been African-Americans. So I just think that, you know, logically, if Kevin Durant were to sit down and ask questions and get some info from people that have played here, you know, or even just listen to guys in the media like Chauncey Billups, you know, who was very complimentary about Boston, I think that it is a legit possibility, and I think that he would definitely highly consider coming here.
Well, we're going to have a call in a minute from Jared Weiss. He's going to be calling in from the TD Garden, so we'll get his reaction to this as well. But, you know, obviously, you know, there's been a lot of talk about Boston as a free agency destination. If you look at the history of free agents coming to Boston, it's not a very good one. Most of the big splashes they've made have come via trade. So I'm very interested to see this offseason what kind of attraction this city gets. Isaiah Thomas is actively recruiting. And we saw it from the All-Star game. He was actively recruiting. Clearly, you know, going into the OKC locker room is probably a recruitment tactic as well. But let's get Jared Weiss's reaction. He's calling in from the TD Garden. And Jared, you know, obviously a lot of talk this week with Kevin in town and some of the reports that have come out about the possibility of Kevin Durant coming to Boston, you know, as a free agent or you know, however they would get him here. But there were some comments made and some questions asked before the game. What are your thoughts on what KD had to say before this one, before we get into tonight's game?
I mean, Boston's a nice city, isn't it? Wouldn't you say that if you were asked? I mean,
I wouldn't Boston, trash it, that's for sure. You know, I mean, that just makes you look bad.
You know, I had an interesting conversation with a very, we'll say, with an NBA Finals MVP once upon a time about what he thinks of Boston. And he said, well, isn't it really racist here? And I explained to him, well, it was about 40 years ago, but things have dramatically changed in the city. And unfortunately, Boston has long suffered from the stigma of its racist past among black NBA players. But because of the development of the Seaport District and the Nightlife District here, I mean, there's a lot more clubs now, stuff like that. Players have, and obviously the restaurant scene has taken off here more than almost anywhere else in the world. Players have a lot more fun when they come here, and their reputation has definitely improved. And a lot of teams get in with a night off, like Thunder did last night, and they get to go out and have fun. If you looked at Russell Westbrook's Snapchat, he had a lot of fun apparently in the city last night. So the reputation of the city as a, you know, as a place to be a young athlete is definitely improved. But with Durant, in Durant's case, it's hard to imagine him walking away from this team, especially when you look at how well they played tonight. I mean, they had a decent first half, and then the second half they were just mind-blowing. And he's got Russell Westbrook and Serge Ibaka there. It's like, even though the Celtics can put together a great you know, they can put together a great setting for a player like Durant. It's hard for him from a roster perspective to beat what he has there.
Yeah, you were around the locker room during this game. I said earlier in the show, it's hard to believe that Kevin Durant, and, you know, it's probably in the back of his mind somewhere. It probably pops up every once in a while. But did you get the feeling that Kevin Durant is really even thinking about his future right now? I mean, they're in the middle of a playoff race. They're still chasing a championship. I think it doesn't seem likely with everyone talking about it everywhere, but do you think Durant has possibly tuned out the noise and he's not even thinking about his future right now in the middle of this competitive season for his team?
I mean, you're asking that like that's the possibility rather than the expectation. Yeah, he's on a team that's fully healthy for the most part for the first time in forever. I mean, he has that whole like that big three that they have there haven't really played together in the playoffs at all during their really long tenure together. It's like Westbrook or Durant, Ibaka, those guys always seem to be hurt in the playoffs. They're actually healthy. They're playing, you know, they've been playing poorly since the All-Star break, but they're obviously tonight we saw that they're really turning the tide on that one. And Durant and Westbrook were just so incredible tonight. And on a night where Serge Ibaka kind of, he didn't really do that well in the post because Amir Johnson did a great job on him. Enes Kanter really stepped up, and that's what they need is they've got three really good big men there. And Kanter, even though he's a terrible defender, he's really good offensively. He's a really good rebounder. And they showed tonight that when you could take away one of the things that they do well, they'll hit you with two other guys. And they did it perfectly tonight. And obviously, Jay Crowder, the Celtics team, misses him so much. It's unbelievable. I mean, his value to this team is proving so unbelievably crucial after these two games where they tried to put Marcus Smart on Kevin Durant, tried Evan Turner, tried James Young, for God's sake. They beat the Thunder tonight beat a really decimated Celtics team, even if it's only two guys out. I mean, that's two really crucial guys for them. But there's no mistaking that the Thunder are one of the best teams in the league, and they're one of the teams that's built best to try to upset the Spurs or the Warriors.
One more real quick question, if you can answer this in just a few seconds. Mike talked about it when we were discussing Durant earlier today. What would you say from being around the team tonight and the history you have being around the Thunder team, what would you say the relationship between Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant is like? Do you think there's any possibility that Durant could just up and leave him and, you know, Westbrook's not a free agent until 2 years from now? Do you think Durant could just ditch a guy he's been with from the start?
You know, I mean, sometimes moving on has to happen in certain points. I mean, they're going to have like 8 years together where they tried to make it work. If it didn't work, then maybe they're ready to move on. I don't see any way that Kevin Durant doesn't sign a one-on-one, which is a one-year deal with a player option the next year, this year, because he gets to wait until the cap explodes and then he makes like an extra, I think he makes like an extra $40 million if he does that. And then it allows him and Russ to be free agents at the same time when, you know, a lot of teams are going to be able to try to sign both of those guys next year with the cap explosion. But I think Durant and Westbrook, any sort of fissures that they've had have been overblown. They've for guys that have a lot of overlaps in the way that they play the game and their skill sets, I think they play incredibly well together. If all those guys are healthy, they're always right there with any team, except for maybe the Warriors and Spurs, who are having two of the best seasons in NBA history this year, to easily be the front runner to win it. But you know, people have made so much about the small fissures that have erupted in their relationship over time. But, you know, I fought with my brother all the time. Everybody fights with their brother. It happens. These guys have been together for so long, and they've proven to be unstoppable together. And I just don't see any reason why the relationship would play a factor into one of them leaving.
Now, going back to what you're talking about, missing Jay Crowder, Jared, you know, obviously Marcus Smart is going to have to step up quite a bit in his absence. And there's going to be some other players, obviously, that are going to be counted upon, some of the young guys that are, you know, likely going to get an opportunity. Marcus Smart has struggled offensively, you know, 1-10 tonight. You know, what did you see from Marcus? You know, what can he do to start turning this around? Because they're going to need him to contribute offensively as well as defensively during the stretch when Jay Crowder's out.
That'd be nice, right? But unfortunately, <Yeah. laughs> when it comes to Marcus Smart, you're going to have to get used to at least in the next, the first, let's say the rookie contract period of his career, I think you're going to just have to get used to him at going through huge slumps. You know, there's components to his shot that I think need work. I think his shoulder positioning is a little inconsistent, and his follow through is a little inconsistent. He's trying to be more of a field shooter, frankly, but he's still learning where his spots on the floor are. And I think he's one of those guys that he's going to get two or three spots on the floor as he gets older, and those are going to be his go-to spots, and he's going to be able to shoot really well from there. So I think it's a matter of time until he's able to be that 14 to 16 point a game score, just because you know he's going to be able to get 6 to 8 points a game just from those specific spots.
Munger, anything you got for Jared?
Yeah, Jared, look, yeah, you had mentioned something about Oklahoma City's roster, you know, being better than ours, and I'm not going to disagree with you. However, do you think Durant on this Thunder roster has a better chance of winning a ring in the West this year, or do you think moving forward our roster in the Eastern Conference, even if we don't add anybody else, even if we just keep it as is, would give Durant a better chance at, you know, not only getting to the finals but winning a championship? Because, again, I think Oklahoma City is a great team. I just think there's so many obstacles for them to overcome, and I think it just basketball-wise, it would be a better career move for him to come out to the Eastern Conference where LeBron is on the decline. He's clearly not the player that he once was. The rest of the East is kind of up for grabs after that, and he could come out here and be the man out here.
You know, I think the last part of what you said there about being the man is the only one that I don't think is really much of a thing. Or not to denigrate it, but like, I don't think that's a factor as much. You make a fantastic point there, but the one thing you have to remember is that while it might be easier to get to the finals if you're in the Eastern Conference, you still have to beat whomever that team is from the Western Conference. So either way, you have to get by the Warriors, you have to get by the Spurs, whoever it is. I don't think there's many guys that really feel like a transition to the Eastern Conference is really what does it for them, especially because guys get hurt. Like, look, every year it looks like the Thunder are going to be the front runner from the West, and then something happens injury-wise and they get knocked down a peg. So I think that there's just so many variables at play there. And frankly, I mean, while the Warriors look like they're probably going to win the next 30 championships, you just have no idea what can happen, and you have no idea with the Curry contract coming up, which is going to be like $30 million or $35 million a year, how that's going to screw up their cap situation. I don't think if Durant really feels, obviously everything changes if they go to the finals or if they win the title this year, but I don't think Durant feels like he has a significantly better shot going to the East and trying to find a team that'll be great rather than being on the team that he's on that already is great and trying to get past great teams. And don't forget the Spurs. Every single year, they're still good somehow. But when they lose their old big three, we don't necessarily know how great they can still be. They're in great position to be great, but you really have no idea how good they're still going to be 3 years from now.
Jared, Greeny and Max had mentioned at the top of their broadcast about how the Celtics, it had been a long time since they were even down by 20 points. They lose by 21 tonight. What did Brad Stevens have to say after this one, you know, relative to the drubbing that they took in this one tonight?
Well, he said he has to do a better job. And he didn't think that the team, like, couldn't bring it, but he really tried to focus. And this is as much trying to kind of protect his team as it is to credit the obvious, but he saw the game as just giving credit to how great the Thunder were, and that it would be unfair to not just give the Thunder all the credit. And then really looking at the third quarter where they lost, was it 42-26 off the top of my head? It was an absolute massacre. I still can't believe they scored that much. But a big part was Serge Ibaka hit a couple big shots, and that kind of really screwed up everything for them because Durant and Westbrook were already going off. But then when you have Ibaka still firing, I mean, that's when the Thunder were arguably tied for the best team in the NBA. So he said at the end of that statement, I didn't do a very good job, and so we'll get better and get ready for Friday night. And he was asked later about going into Friday's game, what does the team do? And he kind of said, well, you can either do two things. You can either lay down and fall over, or you can play as hard as you've ever played in your entire life. So it'll be interesting to see which one of those happens on Friday.
We hope it's the latter. Jared, yeah. What can we expect from the Garden Report after this one tonight?
Well, we ought to hear from Russell Westbrook, who had a monstrous game, hear from the guys in the Celtics locker room, talk about just this Jay Crowder vacancy and how that screws up everything they do defensively. Having Marcus Smart down low covering Kevin Durant, it just the perimeter ball pressure that they rely on to be a fast-breaking team died tonight because of Crowder being out, and they lost 14-4 in fast break points, and that's something where the Celtics almost always win the game.
Jared, one more question from me before I pass it off. We had heard through Twitter, of course, that Isaiah made a very special trip to the Thunder locker room. Do you have anything to add on to those reports that came out?
Yeah, we hear the door open in the Thunder locker room, and little Isaiah Thomas runs in. He's like kind of like the hype man for his dad, where Isaiah's son, who's almost always walking a Celtics t-shirt with Isaiah's number on it, comes running in looking for whomever the target is, whether it's DeMarcus Cousins a few weeks back or Kevin Durant this time. And once you see him come in there, you know that Isaiah's going to be right around the corner. Isaiah ran in, talked really quickly, dapped him up, which apparently was the one thing I didn't tweet tonight that apparently got all the retweets. So if everybody could retweet some random tweet of mine that I can get in on the action, that'd be great. But, yeah, I mean, Isaiah is loved around the league because he's a huge figure, even though he's diminutive. But he is a really sweet and humble guy. He's a really nice and easy to talk to guy. And he's soft-spoken, and people really like that about him. That's why he's become so popular around the league.
All right, great stuff as always from Jared Weiss, our locker room reporter down at the TD Garden. Make sure you catch the Garden Report on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/CLNS Radio. Thanks so much, Jared.
All right, thanks, guys.
All right, that's Jared Weiss. Follow him on Twitter, @CLNS_Jared Weiss. Give him the random retweet like he asked for. This Celtics Locker Room Report has been brought to you by Grandstand. Sports highlights from fans in the stands. On the new sports app, Grandstand, you could share your own Celtics highlights and watch other fans' videos straight from the crowd. Download the Grandstand app on the App Store or at grandstand.me. All right, guys, we've gone long on this one, so I'd love to get your final thoughts as the Celtics lose to the Oklahoma City Thunder by a score of 130-109. Munger, I'll kick it to you first and then to Bobby to leave your final thoughts.
Well, it wouldn't be me if I didn't bring up the dreaded R word, you know, with some negativity, you know, behind my voice. Tonight showed again just, you know, how the effect the referees can have on a game. I'm so aggravated at them right now. It took me this long to bring it up. But, you know, they were just terrible. You know, it didn't help that we couldn't hit the broadside of a barn. And they threw everything they threw up went in. But moving forward, listen, everybody can relax. I think that no matter what happens over these next few weeks, we're not going to fall out of the playoffs. We're not going to be that bad. We're not going to lose, you know, any kind of footing in the playoff race here. We might drop a couple slots, but even if we were to drop down to the sixth seed, I don't think home court advantage matters for this team in the first round. I think that we beat anybody that we face in the first round, whether it's Miami or Charlotte or Atlanta. I think it's irrelevant. I think we're that good right now, and home court in the second round would be irrelevant anyway, because even as a 3 seed, we would still be traveling to Toronto, or as the 4 seed, we'd still be traveling to Cleveland anyway. So I think that people can just kind of take a breath, step back, realize that we're still gonna be us come playoff time. Brad Stevens has proven he's a Coach of the Year candidate. One of the top 3 coaches in the league, probably top 2 with Popovich, depending on who you ask. And this team is going to be fine. We'll get back to playing defense. Shots will start falling again. Olynyk will get into a rhythm. Crowder will come back just in time to get his win back for the playoffs. And, I'll say it on the air right now. You'll see the Celtics in the Eastern Conference Finals.
Bold statements from the Scotsman, Mike Munger, as always. Bobby, your final thoughts here as we wrap up.
It was fun spending a lot of time on Kevin Durant tonight. I just think all the different directions his future could go and how that's going to affect the NBA is just so intriguing. Yeah, I think that's why it took up about probably almost half of the show tonight, especially with how bad the game was and how much we want to avoid talking about that. But back to the situation at hand with the Celtics. Like I said earlier, they're in win-now mode, and if they're going to be able to right the ship right now, they need to make some decisive decisions about their rotations without Jay Crowder, because, like we always say, he isn't walking through that door, at least for a little while. So Stevens needs to make some decisive decisions about what they're going to throw at the Raptors Friday, because suddenly that becomes a very big game with three teams on the Celtics' doorsteps. And while I agree with Munger in some sense that it's really not going to matter where the Celtics fall in terms of home court, I mean, it'd be nice to get that first-round home court, but I don't think that's going to make or break their chances in that series. It's going to come down to how well they play. But I think what does matter, if his bold prediction is going to come true, and it's something I've kind of thought about as well, if they're going to make that Eastern Conference Finals run and kind of use that as a sell in free agency this summer, I think you have to avoid Cleveland round two. I do not think there's any way they can beat that Cleveland team. I'm not saying the Cavaliers are great. They have a lot of flaws, and I do not think they're a championship contender this year. But I think the Celtics are a very bad matchup against them with all their bigs inside, with how LeBron gives fits driving to the paint. I mean, you even saw in that last Cleveland game, they just got knocked out of the building by the Cavs. I think there's a lot of really bad matchups on that Cavaliers team that we saw them take advantage of last spring. So I would like a series much better against Toronto, and that's why if Stevens is going to make a move, he's going to make it now and get this ship back in the right direction, because if they're going to get to the Eastern Conference Finals, I personally think they need that three seed.
All right, make sure you're checking out Bobby Manning's work over on CelticsBlog.com as well. Our friends over there at Celtics Blog, great stuff with him and Kevin O'Connor and the whole crew doing some great work there. So, Bobby, thanks so much for joining us tonight. Munger, you as always, been great to be back on the air with you. It's been a while since we've been together. So we didn't use the R word too much tonight, even though we know that we know when Tommy Heinsohn isn't using their names and just calling them the young refs or the vet refs, that how the game is going when it comes to the officiating. But great stuff from you guys tonight, and great to be on the air with you.
Hey, too, thanks guys. A lot. Great show. Fun. Thanks as always.
Yes, so for my co-host Bobby Manning and Mike the Scotsman Munger, this is Sean Backe. Make sure you tune in Friday night after the Toronto Raptors game, a very important Toronto Raptors game on Friday night. We'll have you covered, of course. Larry H. Russell will have the pregame show up on clnsradio.com by 4 p.m. on Friday, so definitely stay tuned for that, as well as the postgame show after the Raptors game. Thank you so much for listening in tonight, and we look forward to catching up with you on Friday. Thank you.